most of the models we talk about in the book, many, they're disruptive models. They're disruptive to the current regime, to the current models. And when you have disruption, you always have the regime fighting back.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with William Eggers of Deloitte. He's the co-author of the new book, The Solution Revolution, How Business, Government, and Social Enterprises Are Teaming Up to Solve Society's Toughest Problems. Bill, who also worked for many years at Reason Foundation, the research think tank that's affiliated with Reason Magazine and Reason TV, good to see you. Thanks
for coming back. It's great to be back again.
All right. So in The Solution Revolution, you start with some facts that I found particularly interesting. There's one where you write, in 2009, U.S. philanthropy to developed nations exceeded government aid by $9 billion. What is that money going to?
The money is going to all sorts of things. It's going to social enterprises in other countries. It's going to market development. It's going towards companies that people believe, you know, have a double and triple bottom line where they can both solve a problem but also start creating a market.
Right.
So you have a lot of actually philanthropy that's really going into actually market making around all sorts of problems. How do you create a market that can actually help to solve a problem?
And I mean, that's the core of the book, is that the kind of old model where government solves kind of public good problems or public problems, business only cares about the bottom line and returning investment to its stockholders, is gone. So you're talking about a new model in which companies solve these problems while keeping an eye on their bottom line. But you also talk about having double or triple bottom lines. Talk a little bit about that.
So it's basically trying to create a mutual advantage between solving a big societal problem and making a profit. It's no longer rational just to look at kind of shareholder value. You have to look at a lot of other factors, your impact on the world, your environmental impact, your social impact, both positive and negative, because consumers actually care about that, and that's, they're gonna purchase goods or services with their feet, depending on what the social conscience is of business often.
As I was reading the book, I thought often of John Mackey's recent book, Conscious Capitalism, and kind of the way he talks about things. And it seems, I mean, you are somebody who worked at a libertarian think tank. You respect and honor Milton Friedman's economic insight a lot. But talk a little bit about the limitations of a Friedmanite insistence that the only responsibility that a business has is to its stockholders.
Well, first of all, I have to honor Uncle Milk. And one of the best moments of my life was actually getting to play tennis with him in a Mont Pelerin Society meeting back when I was 22 years old.
Did you let him win?
Yes, you don't. Okay. You don't beat him. Yeah. I think he was 87 at the time.
I could see you killing him at the net with even like a lob would probably have knocked him down. But there is a limitation. I mean, basically what you're arguing is you know, in kind of an older model is the government is here and it does certain things, business is here and it does certain things. And it's not that that's wrong or it wasn't right for a certain period, but we're not thinking that way anymore.
No, we're thinking in a radically different way. I've been speaking in all these business schools, and when I was in university, when you were in university, there was no such thing as social benefit organizations, social enterprises, social entrepreneurs. And now at these business schools, 80% of the audiences say that they want to go into something, they want to create a business that has a social purpose, or they want to work with one that's a social purpose. So simply from a talent factor, you have to do that. But we're also finding, as companies are finding, that they actually can create a mutual advantage between solving problems and making a profit. One example is, so Coca-Cola, one of the biggest ingredients in Coke is water, right? And so they need clean water when they're in Africa and India. So actually helping to deal with that issue, the lack of clean water affects 1.1 billion people worldwide. So Coca-Cola said, we can help to alleviate that. And at the same time, we could actually help to get Coca-Cola into more villages because we're solving the clean water problem.
Talk a little bit too, you write about kind of ride sharing programs. And this is a kind of less dramatic example than, you know, bringing potable water to people, which is one of the largest problems facing the world. And it has all kinds of terrible effects. But ride sharing, how are the kind of businesses that you're talking about solving traffic congestion or the idea that, you know, certain people need rides, and don't have cars?
So the biggest waste in our transportation system is in the fact that 85% of people drive to work alone, commute to work. That's 3 or 4 or 5 seats in a car that are wasted, that are empty. And that's a big cause of traffic congestion. Now, the problem before was you couldn't coordinate people's trips together, and you'd have to go into slug lanes like here in DC, where you stand and you walk around the lanes. Well, now with GPS technology, with mobile, you can actually pinpoint and coordinate those rides. So what we estimate is that simply doubling ride sharing in the US, which brings it back to 1970 levels, is the equivalent of, in traffic relief, of spending $27 billion on public transit.
Right. And so, we know, I mean, that public transit has never really paid off in terms of developing the percentage of riders that it would really need to take a bite out of traffic.
Extraordinarily expensive and so forth. And in many cities, in LA and others, there's no place to build new roads. Right. Now, if you could increase throughput, and that ride sharing does that, and all these entrepreneurs have come in and said, you know what, we can actually create a market, a two-sided market between people who have seats in their cars and those who need a ride, and connect them together and help solve the traffic congestion problem in a way that involves zero coercion and very little in terms of government money.
Okay, but then it does raise regulatory problems, and that's one of the things that's interesting about the book, is that, you know, whether it's a program like Uber, which is more of a it's a cutting edge computer app, but it's an older model of kind of taxi cabs, but then Lyft, where people share rides and give donations, these are constantly running into regulatory issues. So what has to happen for a solution revolution to get past these regulatory hurdles?
Yeah, well, first of all, most of the models we talk about in the book, they're disruptive models. They're disruptive to the current regime, to the current models. And when you have disruption, you always have the regime fighting back. And in this case, they're trying to use government to regulate out of the marketplace a lot of these new models. So what's important for government to do is to look at this in a bigger sense. The ride-sharing thing, it's not just about actually regulations on taxis and so forth. It's really about what ride-sharing companies and ride-sharing might do to actually create more public value. And if you look at it in that sense, you say we need to find a way of supporting this and making it happen and taking our regulations and modernizing them. You know, another example where you have that fight is in the Airbnbs and HomeAway, where people are renting out rooms in their house or renting out their apartments. Well, it's been viewed as a fight between hotels and individuals just trying to make a little extra money. Well, in fact, a city should look at it as the fact that, well, oftentimes there's not enough hotel rooms in a city, or they're too expensive for people, and this can increase tourism, which can increase revenues.
But governments tend to look at it as that's like 25% that we're not getting in hospitality taxes, right?
Right. Well, but with Airbnb and HomeAway, if you're doing it, you actually need to charge taxes as it is too. Yeah. So what you're doing is you're opening the market to more people who couldn't necessarily afford expensive hotel rooms.
As a final question, I mean, you talk about a shift in business school, students, and you know they want to do a social purpose as well as make a buck, or they see those two things as consistent with one another. What happened, or is there an easy way to talk about this shift? Because it's a radical shift away from from kind of like the evil banker in It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Potter, to somebody like a John Mackey, who is a crunchy hippie, capitalism loving guy who's bringing an immense amount of joy and new products to people.
Well, I think you saw an entire generation with the millennials, a generation who actually have a social purpose. They wanted to do good. They wanted to look beyond simply the bottom line. But at the same time, they kind of look at a lot of ossified institutions. They might look at government programs or even some of the larger nonprofits that haven't changed and said, I don't think I'm going to make the kind of impact that I want to there. And I do believe in markets in a way. And so they're creating these new models, which basically say we can both build markets and we can make an impact. One of the interesting areas, at every business school, they are coming up with ideas around reducing food waste. Mm-hmm. Food waste is essentially 40% of all food in America is thrown out. It costs $160 billion a year. Well, they're creating little markets around how do you get food recovery? So how do you create supermarkets for the very, very poor that they can go into afterwards? How do you recycle better? And they're saying we could actually make money by doing this and solve this problem.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fascinating. I was going to say my solution is to just eat everything, which obviously produces more problems. But Bill Eggers, the new book co-authored with Paul McMillan is The Solution Revolution, How Business, Government, and Social Enterprises Are Teaming Up to Solve Society's Toughest Problems. Bill, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Nick.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.